Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Tune in on trade deadline day to Sportsnet 650's coverage brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway in Mount Pleasant. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza. Only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at ajs.pizza.
The AJ read is a problem for me because I get
you're just
excited.
Like, oh, I want it now.
Yeah, every day after I've been walking home, I've been like, why do I want AJ's?
Friday, Drance, Friday.
And today, too, apparently.
By the way, I was entrusted by Canberra with the AJ's gift cards for Friday. So I'm the bearer of the gift cards. And I'm saying this on air to hold myself accountable.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm not,
man.
There's no tempted
this
embellishment
here. This plays into everything where we say, who would we trust to fix a flat tire, anything responsible? And everyone's like, ah, Jamie. We would pick Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a heavy responsibility that I'm carrying.
Also,
right,
every time you do the AJ's raid, I feel the need to plug the upside down bar pie with pepperoncini and bacon as the ultimate pizza.
Did you get that at
order.
The staff party in December?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was money, right?
I liked that one, the Detroit one also.
The Detroit one's, the problem with the Detroit one though is you eat one slice,
yes,
you're like comatose.
Yeah.
Which, like, don't get me wrong.
Maybe
I'm here
I'll
for
eat
it.
Again in a week or so after I work this out.
I'm here for it.
Do you have insomnia? Have a Detroit pie.
No, I can't fall asleep after a Detroit pie. I'm too excited.
That's too delighted.
You just said comatose.
Yep.
Got you there.
There's a difference between being comatose and sleeping.
Yeah, but it's not. You're not. You can't be excited and in a comatose state at the same time. Those are mutually exclusive.
That would be an oxymoron.
Try me.
All right. Yeah, I'm very excited for the AJs on Friday and very excited for trade deadline coverage. We'll see what remains to happen on trade deadline day. Hopefully something. But
there's lots of pieces that are going to be traded before Friday.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Right. Still lots of action to happen today and tomorrow. As mentioned, let's get into it. Let's do the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks today, March 6th. We'll start with the headlines. Canucks beat the Kings last night 2-1 in overtime. So now two wins in a row on this little three-game mini road trip that wraps up against Vegas tomorrow. I think an important win for them also coming off the 5-1 letdown, big-time letdown against L.A. last week. Start to bank some points a little bit, just get the momentum pointed in the right direction. I mean, you and I talked at length about this game earlier in the show, but obviously a pretty cagey defensive effort overall from both teams.
Really good work from the Canucks playing a structured game. Didn't love the first 10 minutes the first 5 minutes of the third period. Thought that was the worst that either team played at any point in the game. I ultimately felt like the Kings had their shot to win it, that their strategy worked. They just missed those opportunities. Demko with the tremendous save on Alex Turcotte.
Sensational.
Unbelievable stuff. Pettersson with the game-breaking goal.
And I think it is, I was going to say, a game-breaking moment for Pettersson. And at the height of the like PD debates, I think that's probably what a lot of people are talking about is game-breaking moments are ultimately what you need to see from Elias Pettersson. That's what gets him paid a $92-plus million contract, and that's exactly what that was.
Did it in a high-stakes environment, and now the Kings await, or sorry, now the Golden Knights await, and the Golden Knights are reeling. So a good time for the Canucks to bump into them, get building that confidence. Canucks win their consecutive games for the first time since February 15th.
Yeah.
It had been a while.
So that's an important one last night. The other headline really today is that NHL trade season is in absolute full swing 48 hours before the deadline. A couple of Western Conference teams active in the Pacific Division. The Edmonton Oilers trading a first-round pick plus some other filler to the Tampa Bay Lightning for salary retention.
What it was.
Window dressing,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, window dressing.
It's window dressing.
Oh. Mid-round picks and yada, yada,
Can
yada.
Can I ask you a very important question,
sure,
actually? Sorry, I'm squirreling this whiteboard.
segment. Do you prefer intensify or intensifying or machinations?
Machinations.
Really?
Yeah. Why?
Oh, man. Nothing gets me more excited than intensifying.
Than like talks
why.
Are intensifying. Or
talks
something
are
like
intensifying.
That?
It's like, oh my god.
By the way, we looked up the Google pronunciation of machinations yesterday.
Oh,
in fact, machinations.
Machinations. All right.
I doubt that. Anyway.
Okay. Anyways, so first and window dressing going out from Edmonton. Adam Henrique, Sam Carrick arriving. I should note Ken Holland is also out there saying he's going to be active looking for a defenseman because he still has cap space. But I will note this would seem to take them out of the Jake Guentzel running. They'd been another team mentioned as interested in the player. That's Edmonton. Colorado trades Ryan Johansson and a first to Philly for Sean Walker. Then they turn around and trade Bowen Byram for Casey Mittelstadt to Buffalo. So Ryan Johansson and Bowen Byram in a first out, Sean Walker and Casey Mittelstadt in, which is just a really fascinating series of moves for a contender ahead of the deadline. Now, Colorado, I believe, still has cap space as well. And I do think it's interesting as we talk about the Canucks potentially flipping Elias Lindholm. I think probably the teams most often mentioned as potential Elias Lindholm destinations before the Canucks trade were Boston and Colorado. I don't know if there's any appetite from Colorado on that now that they've gone out and gotten Casey Mittelstadt, but I just think it's worth noting there that Colorado has been linked to Elias Lindholm in the past. And then out east.
But you're still doing headlines.
Yep.
This isn't brought to you. Okay,
no.
Keep going.
Out east, Vladimir Tarasenko goes to Florida from Ottawa.
Sunny Isles, specifically.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
And Alex Wenberg goes to the New York Rangers from Seattle. So the Kraken, at least in a little bit of sell mode. I don't think it's any surprise that Wenberg was traded. We'll see what other pending UFAs they're either willing or, you know, eventually decide to trade. But that's everything that's happened today, just to get everyone caught up on where we are so far.
Broadsheet?
Yeah, let's go to the broadsheet.
Broadsheet, the immediate pivot point is the Eberle to Foley tier is an interesting one. So here's where we sit today. The Elias Lindholm thing, Elliot Friedman talked today and described it as real.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Dhaliwal has sort of echoed some of that reporting. My understanding of where things sit is that, you know, because the fit's been tough, right? Because Lindholm hasn't necessarily found chemistry as a winger with one of Vancouver's top two centermen, and because this team really wants to put some nitrous into their top six forward group, you know, the fit hasn't been as anticipated for Lindholm in Vancouver. All of that said, the club's plan is not to deal Lindholm before Friday's deadline.
Right. They're not, like, trying to get it done before the deadline.
Which isn't to say that some team couldn't knock their socks off, but we'll see where that goes. Guentzel, the Canucks obviously love the player. And that's the active ingredient in why, until Gensel's dealt elsewhere, or Vancouver, we're going to be talking about this. Other people are going to be talking about this, and reports are going to surface. This organization's regard for the player is through the roof, as you'd expect, given what Guentzel has done for them in the past. What can Guentzel do for you? Just go see his,
help you win a Stanley Cup.
Just go see his playoff run in 2017. Yep. Like, honestly, one of the hottest runs we've ever seen from a guy through the Stanley Cup playoffs. It was incredible stuff. And then he got better from there. My understanding, or my sense of it, is that the Canucks have certainly inquired. There's definitely some sticker shock. And I don't think the Canucks have a high degree of confidence that they're going to be able to land this player.
And just to round up kind of everything that's out there on Guentzel, because there's a lot out there. And this morning, especially, so Josh Yoey, your Athletic colleague in Pittsburgh, says that the Canucks are aggressively trying to make a Guentzel trade happen. Elliot Friedman saying that he's really looking at Carolina on Guentzel, says they have the prospects. Also notes, however, that historically they're not really a big trading for rentals team, so that's an interesting caveat there. Friedman echoing what you're saying, since Vancouver doesn't think they can win this race, people are waiting to see what Carolina does. Chris Johnston, who of course broke the news that the Canucks were interested potentially, or at least thinking about flipping
Lindholm, the conversation with Boston
yesterday. He was on Donnie and Dolly today, and this is where I find the Guentzel thing really interesting, is that you're hearing not necessarily contradictory, but things that don't immediately obviously fit together on Guentzel from very reliable sources, right? From Josh Yoey, from Elliot Friedman, from Chris Johnson. And this one, CJ saying that the Guentzel market remains murky, in his words, maybe not quite as robust as you might think it would be or as the Penguins were hoping. Also says the Canucks are really active, not just on Guentzel, but in general, trying to upgrade their forward group. And I should also point out, as you said, from Elliot Friedman, he says the Lindholm stuff is real. Vancouver is trying to add a forward. He specifically name checks Guentzel, Zucker, and Toffoli.
And I want to add Eberle to the mix,
all
too.
Right.
Just as like, you know, Guentzel top tier, right? But Eberle, Toffoli is this sort of secondary tier of scoring wingers that fit the sort of boost Vancouver's looking to give their forward group in an ideal world. And both players are guys who could, like, tomorrow or even later this afternoon, you could hear the news that either player has been extended or that they've been dealt. Like, these are going to go down to the wire with teams who haven't quite given up on their playoff lives yet. So those are two interesting situations to track with the Canucks in mind. And then you get to that, like, Zucker tier.
Yeah.
I would expect the Canucks to do something before the deadline passes. But, you know, cost is going to be central to their consideration.
So here's, I'm going to map out, with no inside information that I have, of course, where I think things stand and what I'm kind of projecting in my mind that we'll see for the Canucks between here and the deadline. All
with,
right.
With the heavy caveats that things can change in an
right,
awful
and I'm going to ask you to, like, evaluate how close you think I am, how accurate I think this is. So I think they're going to wait. Pittsburgh is going to wait and see if Carolina decides to buck up and put some of their top prospects in on Jake Guentzel. If that doesn't happen, the Canucks might get back into the running. Not that that means they'll get him, but that maybe that's where the sense that they can't do it now is coming from. If Carolina doesn't meet the price, maybe the Canucks are still in. Should they not get Guentzel, then it's wait and see what happens with Toffoli and Eberle. And if they're either of them is on the market, I would expect the Canucks to be very strongly in pursuit of them, given how well they fit the needs for this team. And then as kind of a final recourse, you go to Zucker and anyone else who might fit the kind of
that
scoring winger mold. But that's kind of the progression that I picture in my mind right now.
I could see it playing out like that. I the only things I'd sort of quibble with, I suppose, or expand on would be, you know, I strongly doubt that Pittsburgh is down to one serious suitor on Guentzel.
Right.
Strongly doubt. Like, the Rangers have cap space. Guentzel would be a shot in the arm, a significant one for that team, especially given their need for, like, fast guys who defend well. Like, you add Wennberg and Guentzel to that mix, that is a team with a totally different ceiling, in my view, as a two-way group 5-on-5. Colorado, $5 million in space. We know how aggressive they are, right? Mm-hmm. That one is interesting to me. Colorado doesn't have a ton of assets, but they do have a really top-end prospect in Callum Ritchie, who would absolutely interest anybody. There's a lot of teams that I would expect to be more in on Guentzel.
To be fair, if the price comes down, that has the effect of drawing more teams in.
Right.
Like, teams could be out because the price is sky high. If you have to bring the price down, then all of a sudden a lot of teams might be interested.
Now, and I do think that's where Vancouver is a bit. I think the price would have to come down for Vancouver to get back into that mix. The only sort of other caveat that I'd add is if the Canucks find a deal that makes sense for them, they're not going to wait on, you know, like, if the Zucker price drops to a level that they're happy with, that they're content to pull the trigger on, I would expect that they'll just move on that. You know, like, the Canucks are going to make a fair deal for themselves. I don't think they're going to necessarily, like, poker play this and strategically wait out the market, given their lack of assets, given their desire to play in the mid-range market and just kind of clean up. I think they'll probably try to be more active than that. They'll try to find a guy that fits what they want at a price that they like. And I'd expect once they find that, they'll move the trigger, whether it's at the deadline or ahead of it.
We should also note in the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard from Rick Dhaliwal earlier today on his show and on our show, no information about an imminent signing out there on Phil Kessel. And in fact, it doesn't sound like a decision has been made per Rick Dhaliwal's reporting. So that's still a situation that's ongoing. As he said, people really expected this to be kind of a done deal when he came to town, but you know, we're less than 48 hours now from when he'd have to sign to be eligible for the playoffs. No deal yet.
Rick doesn't seem to have trepidation about it. I kind of do. But yeah, Canucks don't seem to have made their decision and don't seem to have a timeline aside from the fact that, yeah, obviously a decision must be made by Friday.
They do have a timeline. I don't know if they have one on top of that.
I would say they have a deadline. They don't have a timeline.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to move beyond that deadline, though. All right, so that's a big overview of everything that's happening. As I said, there's a lot out there about the Canucks specifically and the league in general today as we set up for a very busy 48 hours here, 46 hours, really, coming up to the NHL trade deadline. Lineup notes, Facilipod Colson assigned to Abbotsford. And again, when we talked to Rick Dhaliwal earlier today, you know, he was saying a lot of people jump to, does that mean they're signing Phil Kessel? Does that mean Dakota Joshua is nearing a return? Rick saying it's neither of those things. I believe I saw Patrick Johnston from Post Media on Twitter saying he'd talk to the club and it was basically housekeeping. You paper Pod Colson down now and it allows him to be eligible for the AHL playoffs.
You also need the roster spot in the cap space to seize an opportunity that comes along, right? So like, why do it later when you can do it now? My understanding is that some of the additional moves that the club could make to free up additional roster spots and cap space, Friedman and Amon going on waivers, were situations that I certainly was interested in monitoring as the week unfolds. Seems like the team's pretty reluctant to do those sorts of things. Like, it would require an upgrade incoming on one of them for that to happen. So I'm not really expecting that we'll see either player on waivers at 11 a.m. tomorrow. And then, you know, very much so.
Just the one thing I want to point out on that is, if you, like, you're potentially out of roster spots if you, because if Dakota Joshua comes back from IR, your roster is full. Now, you could switch Tyler Myers to IR. But then if you sign Phil Kessel, that's a full roster, right? Yeah. And so then if you wanted to make a trade that wasn't player in, player out, you would have to send one of those guys on waiver. Well, so it, like, the math and the roster crunch gets dicey in a hurry.
Not to mention the fact that they only have about $1 million in space with Pod Colson going down. Right. So it's like you're really up against it in terms of making an ad. I mean, even a Zucker deal is going to require double retention, you know, like it's 1.25 and even that's tight. So, I mean, look, there's a lot of reasons why I've said all week that I think a mid-range deal is somewhat more likely for the Canucks. This is among them. Right. Just the raw mathematics of it. And then on Pod Colson, the other thing to bear in mind here, I think the club was happy with his performance for the most part. I don't think there's any disappointment or any sense of disappointment or anything. But, you know, I do think their original plan all along has been to have Pod Colson perform at the American League level all season in sort of trying to mimic the Nils Höglander model, rebuilding his confidence. They did want to get Baines and Pod Colson an opportunity to become accustomed to, like, the NHL routine, the rhythms of it. Should injury befall the club and they need those guys in key games, either down the stretch or into the playoffs, I think that's sort of what we saw here. There was definitely, I think the club was definitely impressed by the impact that his size had on their team level game. But I don't think there was a sense that he was, like, consistently bringing, you know, the sort of impact that they're certainly hoping he can going forward.
He didn't blow the doors off and demand a spot in the
without
lineup.
Question, he didn't, right? Like, is that controversial?
No, not at all. Playoff forecast, even with Edmonton also winning, despite, you know, they were down very, very late against Boston. They tie it, win in overtime. So even with Edmonton winning, the Canucks' division chances per Dom's model improved to 64%, which, again, reflects what we've talked about a couple of times, Edmonton just running out of runway. So even if Vancouver's just holding serve with the Oilers, that's very, very good for their chances. I will say, though, a couple of unfortunate results for the Canucks. Not only that Edmonton won, them coming back and getting the victory late against Boston, but Dallas coming back against San Jose to win in overtime. So they're still projected to win the Western Conference overall. I believe they're projected to finish with 110 points. The Canucks are in second with 109.
So, what was the Oilers' chances again?
So, the Oilers' chances, I would have to double check here, they have a 33% chance of winning the division,
which is almost a perfect match with the
Canucks are 64%. So, it's a two-team race.
Yeah, Canucks are 67% implied probability. That's minus 210. We're on to gambling odds. Minus 210 in terms of the gambling odds to win the Pacific. The Oilers are plus 212 at the moment. Interesting in that there's a very close adherence between Dom's model and the books in terms of that. No real big futures updates that are of interest to the Canucks. Things are pretty much in stasis in terms of, like, Hughes is going to win the Norris, but Canucks, though, have opened as minus 105 road dogs. But that's a pick 'em. That's a pick 'em,
yeah, so
between
Vegas
them and
is
Vegas.
What? Like minus
115? Minus 115.
Yeah.
So a pick 'em odds in the Vegas Canucks game tomorrow in terms of the opening line. We'll see if either side gathers any steam as we go here. But, I mean, that's an extremely close line given how high the market's been on Vegas throughout this season.
We need a steam whistle. That's what we need for the gambling odds section. So I sound the steam whistle every time you mention whether there's steam or not on one in one direction.
I do like to say steam.
You do?
Yeah.
Get
it's
the
my,
steam
it's
whistle
my
sounder?
Little tribute to Stan Smeal every show.
There you go. That's very nice. Also fascinating because if the Canucks beat Vegas, I think they are increasing their chances of meeting Vegas in the first round, right? Because you're increasing the chances that Vegas would finish fourth in the Pacific. So we've been talking about Edmonton as potential playoff previews. This one tomorrow night against Vegas could end up being a potential playoff preview as well. All right, that does it for us today. A very busy show. Lots going on around the NHL. We'll see what the next 24 hours or so brings for the Vancouver Canucks. And, of course, we will be back to break it all down tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.